So now moving on to agenda paper 4, and Javid? Yes.
Thank you. Agenda paper 4 is on contributing property, plant and equipment to an associate. The submitter described a fact pattern in which three entities that are under common control set up a new entity and contribute PP&E to that entity in exchange for shares. After the contribution, each investor has significant influence over the entity. The transaction is carried out at market terms. The submitter asked three questions, and we'd like to discuss each question separately, asking for your views before moving on to the next question. So going on to question A, the submitter asked whether IFRS standards provide a general exception or exemption from applying the requirements in a particular standard to common control transactions. Our analysis is outlined in paragraph 24 to 27. We think that unless an IFRS standard specifically excludes common control transactions from its scope, an entity applies the applicable requirements in that standard to a common control transaction. I would like to direct your attention to question 1 on page 8 and ask if you agree with our analysis and conclusion on this matter.
We're talking about question 1, which relates to question A.
That's right.
Yeah.
Bruce. Thank you. I agreed with the staff's analysis on this. I would be very concerned if we had a principle that said we start taking exemptions and the standards and applying them to other places. So I was fully supportive of that.
Thank you. Bonnie?
Just an overall comment. I think when I first read through this transaction, I was very influenced by my U.S. GAAP mind, which was at a parent company level, and looking at a lower level reporting entity, the staff's analysis makes sense when I think about it in the proper context. So I think it's important to acknowledge what's the reporting entity and what level are we looking at, which I think it does further on in the analysis, but I think perhaps, you know, somebody that might be coming from a slightly different perspective, it will be very helpful to clarify, because in the standalone financial statements of the investors, agree with the staff's conclusion, makes complete sense. But at the parent company level, you get to a very different answer. So that's just an overall comment.
It's been clear that we're talking about the associates / investors.
Okay, fair point. Any other comments on question 1? Or does silence suggest agreement? Bertrand?
Yeah, just a rather formal comment saying that I agree in the context of this agenda paper. If we assume that the conclusion in agenda paper 5F is the one, I would say, and then I will probably comment when we reach agenda paper 5F.
Okay, but you agree with the answer to question 1's?
Within the boundaries
of this question,
of the specific question, within the boundaries of the existing requirements within IS 28, and if you purely analyze things as it is done by the staff, yes, the answer to the question is to me yes. But then, what I would question is more the answer reaching agenda paper 5F.
Yeah, which is a close cousin, but slightly different. Okay, so I think the committee seems to agree with question 1, and so we can move on to
question B.
Question B.
Okay, question B. Paragraph 28 of IS 28. Requires an entity to recognize a gain or loss on a downstream transaction with an associate only to the extent of unrelated investors' interest in the associate. The submitter asked whether this reference to unrelated investors refers to investors other than the reporting entity, or if it refers to investors that do not meet the definition of a related party in IS 24. Our analysis is outlined in paragraph 29 to 39. in our view, an investor recognizes any gain or loss on a downstream transaction to the extent of other investors' interest in the associate. I would like to direct your attention to question 2 on page 11 and ask if you agree with our analysis and conclusion on this matter.
Martin? Yeah, principally I agree. My question would be, what do we mean by property, plant, and equipment? Is IP included or not? Because we are solving here an issue, and then more or less it could be a little bit broader, it's the same as the topic we just discussed before, and do not reduce it just to property, plant, and equipment. And another comment which turned out to be relevant probably later, here in this fact pattern, we focus on a point in time recognition with regard to the overall gain. You also might have transactions where you have overtime recognition. And this, I mean, this for sure was not part of the submission. I'm aware of that. But if we deal with that topic, and I guess we are dealing with that in a nice way, and I like the examples, I like this stuff paper, to be honest, we should probably consider whether we add these 2 points. One point is something different, a properly planned equipment, whether the answer would be different, and the other thing is what would happen if it is an over time recognition and not a point in time. Could also be with regard to eliminating intercompany intercompany profit.
I can't comment. I won't comment on the overtime because I certainly haven't thought about it. Just to say that, you know, this particular question B, which is all about how you the words in paragraph 28 of IS 28, that's not restricted to PP&E. Of course, it talks about, you know, any upstream or downstream transactions, and the example even of downstream transactions just refers to sales or contributions of assets from the investor. So it's certainly why.
John.
I mean, I agree with the staff analysis. I've never considered that unrelated, referred to in IAS 28 to be related to the notion of, unrelated to be referring to related parties in IAS 24. I mean, I think it's talking about the investors that are not part of the reporting entity that contributed the assets. I think it would be helpful in the agenda decision, though, to make clear that it's not referencing IAS 24. We don't mention that in, I mean, the conclusion is there that it's not means something different, but we don't actually say it doesn't mean the same as IAS 24. I think that would be helpful in the agenda decision.
I think that would be helpful.
And I think it's fairly clear from SIC 3 and the history behind how this got into IAS 28 that it's not the same.
Anybody else want to add any comments? No? We can move to the easy bit, question C.
Yep, question 2. The submitter asked whether an investor determines the gain or loss on contributing PP&E to an associate and the cost of its investment in the associate based on the fair value of the PP&E contributed or the fair value of its acquired interest in the associate. Our analysis is outlined in paragraph 41 to 81 of this paper, and paragraph 82 to 84 outline our conclusions on this matter. This question has an effect in practice only if the fair value of the PP&E contributed differs from the fair value of the equity interest in the associate received in exchange for that PP&E. In the fact pattern described, we would generally expect these fair values to be the same. However, in some relatively rare situations, this might not be the case. Applying the requirements as outlined in our analysis, an entity would recognize the same gain or loss on contributing PP&E and the same carrying amount for its investment in the associate as that which would result if the entity determined those amounts based on the fair value of the PP&E contributed. The entity would also consider whether the transaction provides objective evidence that its interest in the associate might be impaired. If the fair value of the PP&E contributed is more than the fair value of the acquired interest in the associate, we think this would provide objective evidence that the entity's interest in the associate might be impaired. With that, I would like to direct your attention to question 3 on page 25 and ask if you agree with our analysis and conclusion on this matter.
Bob?
I agree with the outcome that the staff has come to, but I come to it in a little bit different fashion. And let me break it down to the two facts, the two different cases that the staff was dealing with. The first one is where you cannot identify whether there a reason, a basis for a difference between the fair value of the associate that you just received and the PPE you've given up. And I agree, that should be the vast majority of the cases. And I agree, you know, conceptually, there, you know, unless you can identify a difference, the fair value of those two should be the same. However, in practice, when you actually do appraisals, you might find that they actually come out to be different. I think what you have to do in that case is then you have to reconcile. You have to, which is the better, best measure, or is there something between? You have to go and do a little bit more work, but it should be just one value for both pieces. And I thought we could bring that out a little bit more in the agenda decision, that you got to, which one is the best measure. In the rare case, and I agree, rare case of, you know, there is a difference, I came about the analysis a little bit differently than the staff's analysis of, we'll go calculate the gain or loss on the PP&E, and then you adjust that and get back to the cost of the equity method investment being, you know, that purchase price, that what you, the fair value of what you've given up. I actually think there's a conflict in the literature. I think there's a conflict between 16 and 28, and my basis for that is if you look at your accounting entries, you actually then adjust the gain so that it isn't what 16 tells you what the gain should be on the derecognition of the PP&A. So in my mind, when you've got this conflict, you've got to choose one, and I think the right answer is what you came to, which is, well, it's really all about the cost of the equity method investment, because the PP&E derecognized, that's one-time transaction, that's gone. We're not accounting for that in the future. We're accounting for the equity method in the future. My starting point on that has to be cost, which is the fair value of what I've given up, which is what your conclusions are. I just come about it in a different way.
Answers on that? Andrew?
I similarly was comfortable with the answer that staff got to. Curiously, I ended up pondering something a little bit like Bob's, but he put it much better than I would have put it, so I'll just stop there and say I would rather, I can see that there are different ways of looking at it, but it comes to the same answer, it comes to the right answer. The one thing that I did think about a little bit, and we might be able to get it into the agenda decision, is that when you're looking at intra-group transactions, quite often they're structured so that the pricing isn't exactly on market. And in the agenda paper, we talk about amounts going to profit or loss. However, if you had a subsidiary that is directed by a parent to transfer an asset at over or under value, because that's just how the transaction is structured by the parent, you might end up with a transaction with someone in its capacity as a shareholder, and that might then take the tail of the entry to somewhere other than profit or loss. So we might see if we could include something to say that you need to give consideration to this just to get the right account.
Which is a point that comes up again in the context of 5F.
Everybody loved that there. But yes, I take your point. John?
Yeah, I tended to, a bit like Bob, I think that the answer you get to in the end, I think, is the right answer, but I sort of think that I'm not sure I understood how the literature got you through the analysis to start. I mean, I suppose it's logical to start with a derecognition of the asset and say, what's the gain? And then the next logical step is to say, eliminate part of that gain. And then the next logical step is to look at the cost. So I think logic would say this is the right way to look at it, but I'm not sure the literature tells you that this is the only way to look at it. And I think the outreach suggests that some people use, well, which of them is more reliable, and they would actually then end up with maybe something different if they taught them the measurement of the fair value of the associate, interest in the associate. You know, some people in the outreach did comment that back. I tend to agree this is the analysis I would support, but more from a logical thinking rather than necessarily anything that's written in the literature or so.
Candy, I read this one. I personally never like it when we talk about this topic, because I don't know what all these accounting entries actually tell me in the end as a user of the financial statements. What just happened here? What's the value? What does this number actually mean? But when I read this discussion, it's like, well, you know, we have to decide which one's more reliable. But in doing that, you have to do both of them. And it's not clear to me that we actually say that. And it's not clear to me that, you know, what actually gets disclosed of these transactions, you know? Is it really important that the accounting be consistent, or are the transactions so unique that every user of the financial statements, if they can see them, will take a look at them and evaluate them differently? And do they have enough information to do that? Do they know what's being given up? Do they know what's being received back? Do they know why the entity is doing this transaction? And do they know what this gain actually represents? So I understand the accounting entries and the like, but I guess I take a step back and say, what does this all tell me? And to me, you know, I was just going to say, as a user of the financial statements, are you going to see the value of each of these? Because we seemingly make a determination about which one's more reliable, but you have to be both to know that. And is that shared with the user of the financial statements, I guess is my question. Because I think every one of these transactions, if they're material, is going to be thought about differently. And each user may take it in, take it out, make their own conclusion, ask different questions. For me, I was more concerned about actually the disclosure than I was what the actual accounting answer was.
Thank you. Tony?
I guess similar view to Bob and John, that I don't have any objection to the conclusion. I'm just not sure that I can follow that conclusion through the literature. So, you know, I agree that typically you would expect the fair value of what was given up to be the same as the fair value of what you received. There might be circumstances, maybe particularly if the assets are leased back, in which that might not be the answer. There might be other circumstances where it really is not the same. So I think there are circumstances where there could be a difference. And like John, I looked at 16, it tells me how to calculate the gain. I looked at 28, it says to recognize the investment in the associate at cost. And I couldn't see a step that then said you have to eliminate part of the gain. I'm comfortable that as an answer makes sense and that you end up with the associate at cost, but I couldn't actually see how the literature took me there. And certainly the evidence of the way it's been read in practice, and I know we've got to work on what the words say here, but the way it's been read in practice is that quite a lot of people have said, well, look at the which of the two fair values is more reliable. And I think, for example, if in exchange for giving up an asset, a company received a listed associate with a level one fair value for the associate, I think quite a lot of folks would have said, we'll take the level one fair value rather than a level three fair value for the PP&E. And so what I'm not sure comes through to me at the moment is what it is in the literature that makes it clear that the cost measure means you adjust the gain on disposal. And I guess I wonder, the paper that this reminded me of more than anything was the interaction of IFRS 9 with IAS 28. And in the end with that one, we decided that it ought to be something that clarifies the standards rather than an agenda decision. And I just wondered if this was a bit complicated for an agenda decision. So comfortable with the outcome, just not sure I can see where the literature says it specifically.
So can I just, only to say, because Bob mentioned something about, sorry, I only want to just test what you're thinking, saying, Tony, and for other people. So Bob, I think when you spoke, you talk about one of the first things you do is you look at, you know, the relative fair values, and you work out, is there a reason for there to be a difference? And, you know, if there's no reason for there to be a difference, then that might make you look a bit closer at the fair values, and part of that is probably looking at the reliability. And so I suppose, Tony, what I was going to ask you was, is that, and it's true, Bob, maybe we can draw that out more, and one of the things at least we said, I think it's what you're saying, Bob, but tell me if I'm wrong, is kind of in paragraph 43 of the paper, we do kind of talk about if, when you initially look at this, there, you know, appears to be, you know, any difference, then we'd expect the investor to first of all look at the procedures and a bit look a bit more closely actually at sort of the fair value measurement and those numbers. And I thought that was kind of what Bob was saying. So what I heard you say, but I think I might be hearing it wrong, Tony, is, oh, I'll just automatically go and pick sort of the numbers more reliable. And I'm not saying I would say the outcome's different, but I would think in re-looking at your fair value, you're potentially just looking a bit closer at how you've estimated your fair value.
That's fair. I think I probably jumped a step. So I agree with what Bob said. You'd start by saying, well, have I got evidence that the fair values are different? If the fair values are different, then the first step will be to say, well, is there a reason for them being different? Is there something else in this transaction that provides a reason? But then you move on from that and you say, well, actually, there doesn't seem to be a reason. And the fair values are different. And I think that's the situation in which certainly what I've seen in practice is that people would look to which is the more reliably measurable of the two to measure this transaction.
Yeah, and I suppose all I was wanting to clarify is I think I'm not necessarily saying that I think that what you're saying is maybe different from what we've said. It may come across that what we've said is different, because almost we would consider that, and what we were saying in paragraph 43, we'd almost consider that maybe to be the first thing you do is you maybe have a closer look at your fair values, and then
which is almost an IFRS 13 question, as opposed to is it a 28 or a 16 question?
Yeah. Agreed.
Have I got the fair value right? Yes. And how do I get confident on that?
Absolutely, and I think that those steps, I agree with Katrina, those steps come first. To say, are you happy with your fair values? If there appears to be a difference, is there something wrong with the way you've done your fair value? Or is there a reason for there to be a difference? But once you've got past that step, then I think the conclusion in the staff paper, I'm comfortable with it as a conclusion, is that you end up with the associate at cost. I'm just, like John or Bob, I think that there is potentially a conflict, and there isn't something that says specifically that you would eliminate part of the gain.
Okay. Carl?
Yes, after reading the paper, I experienced the very same discomfort on this question C. I don't think it's possible to get an answer through agenda decision. To the extent it's very interpretative and very complex to solve in kind of 10 lines. I don't think it's the proper way to address this part of the submission. Eventually an interpretation or some standard setting activity would be preferable.
Okay, thank you. Yang-Su?
Oh yes, I had the same, you know, the thought as Tony and Bob had. When I got through the step one and step two and step three, I thought, why we need all those steps? the conclusion was just the, you know, the fair value given, fair value of what's been given up is the fair value of the OCC. Then we can just start from the fair value of the what's given up, you know, PPE given up, and then eliminate the gains and losses, internal gains and losses. Then we can get to the same conclusion. So that's actually what I had in my mind when I read it. But I have another, you know, the question actually. You know, the conclusion of question C was that, you know, the fair value of what's given up is the cost. But what if that fair value of what's given up is not reliable? That's just, you know, Tommy said, maybe level three. And what's, you know, the interest, the fair value of interest received is more reliable. And do we still have to stick to the PPE's fair value given up? So I think that that is what's been asked by the submitter, even if they did not specifically say that, but we have two different fair values. Which one is the one we have to do? But what if that one is not really reliable? And what do we have to still have to stick to the original one? So that's the question I have.
I mean, I don't know whether some of this maybe we should come back and specifically talk about in the agenda decision, because you'll notice in the agenda decision we did try to, you know, address, you know, some of this, talk about, you know, potentially relooking at your procedures and fair value, talk about if there's any indication there might be impairment, etc. So there is something in there already, but it might be that based on comments we want to enhance that a bit.
Reinhardt?
I agree with the end conclusion, and I agree with a number of things that others have said. I think what I'm hearing, consistent with my thoughts, is we get to the same spot. And so I personally would be reluctant not to issue an agenda decision that indicates that, you know, you measure the cost of the investment, which is based on the fair value of the consideration you've given up. This, as John said, the logic in terms of reconciling, you know, the disposition of the PPE, the gain or loss you recognize in disposition, and then how that ties into IS 28, I agree that's not specifically addressed in the literature. That might be something as a separate project to address that disconnect. But as I say, I would be hesitant or reluctant given the situation, and given that we all, what I'm hearing, generally agree with the answer, not to issue an agenda decision that reflects that.
I'd have to say that, as Chair, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that. I will anyway. I agree with what you've just said, partly because if we get into the same outcome, obviously that means we have to be careful how black and white we are in terms of what the steps have to be, but if we're comfortable with the outcome, I think it would be good to try and issue an agenda decision that reflects that, because for me, I find it hard to envisage what the narrow scope amendment would be that would be a reasonable size project for the committee to do on a timely basis that's sort of out of the context of the bigger equity method project that the board has always sort of got on its horizon. So while it sort of feels a little bit uncomfortable that we do seem to have a tension between pieces of literature, if we could do something practical in literature, I think that would be my gut reaction, and maybe Mary agrees with me because she put her card down, so that's good.
And I suppose I just wanted to only to reiterate and confirm as well, but you know, I understand, and it's natural when you look at it, you know, if it's taken us 36 pages to talk about an issue in total and an agenda decision goes on, a natural starting point is to think, oh, you know, look, but I think it's just the nature of the transaction. So we've been asked a question about a transaction that ends up involving both disposal of PP&E, acquiring an interest in an associate, that means there's equity method accounting involved. It's also, you know, potentially with related parties, it's common control. So I just think it's the nature of the transaction to me, at least as staff, obviously in the paper, I felt comfortable there was enough in the literature to walk through. It's just because it involves different pieces of literature, you have to maybe piece it together.
All right, so with that, the next question I'm going to ask the committee is question 4, which is on page 26 of the paper, which is firstly whether you agree with the staff's recommendation not to add this matter to the Interpretation Committee's standard setting agenda. Bonnie, you want to say something before you put your hand up?
Yeah, I do. Just maybe you're going to get to another question.
just on the wording. I agree with where the staff has gotten to. I think there's a couple of points that need to be clarified in the fact pattern. Because as I was reading through the submission, there is a bit about assets that might be constructed by the new associate, which if it's just PP&E that's being contributed, it begs the question where that comes from. Are there additional contributions by the investors or someone else? Is this really, if there's other contributions coming from the investors, is it really outside the scope of IFRS 3? I understand that's not the part of the discussion here, but I think it needs to be clarified that this is not a joint operation. This is outside the scope of IFRS 3, which I think is clearly stated, just to eliminate some of the potential periphery that could be kind of read into that, particularly because that operating lease bit is in there.
All right, so firstly, can I get a show of hands on whether the committee agrees that with the recommendation not to do standard setting on the stop?
1, 2, 3, 4.
So that's 13 with Sandy. And then, do you want to talk first about the wording, Katrina? Based on some of the comments that have been made, particularly on the sort of the check on the fair value point.
Yeah, so what I have picked up as at least suggestions that I want to then see if the committee agrees with, and then, by the way, open it up for other suggestions, is that in the agenda decision at the minute, the draft, on page 29, when we were specifically talking about whether, you know, if there was a situation where maybe the fair value of the PP&E might be more than the fair value of the equity interest, in that section, we did mention the investor looking a bit closely at its fair value. I think what I picked up is maybe we should maybe bring that more up front and make it more, not just when the fair value of PP&E might be more, but kind of say, look, one of the first things you do is when you initially work out fair values, if there was any, you know, you'd look closely at whether there's a reason for the difference. And if there isn't a reason for the difference, then the investor might look a bit more closely at the procedures that's used for fair value. So I'd bring that comment that came across sort of from Bob and Tony, I think, and Young Su, in, first of all, in the analysis. I think the other thing that potentially we could do is, at the minute, at the bottom of page 28, top of page 29, we spell out, I suppose, the steps that we went through as staff in the paper in getting to the conclusion and find that's sort of the only way to read the requirements. So I suppose what we could do there is maybe, I won't use the word neutralise it, but take out the specificity in that and maybe more focus the question, say, answer on the outcome. Not on sort of saying you have to do A and then you have to, so what's in bullet A, you know, you have to do what's in bullet A and then you have to do what's in bullet B. So more focus then just on the paragraph that comes next that talks about the outcome.
And the other point that was raised in the discussion was the point that Martin made on question B about the fact that the question we asked you was specific on PP&E, but actually paragraph 28 of 28 is more general. I think that is better reflected actually in the agenda decision, because we talk first about what the paragraph said and then say, and therefore.
And sorry, just to pick up, I forgot to mention John's point in question B, just to maybe refer to IS 24 and say it wasn't in IS
24. Yes. Agreed. Yes. Specifically, I guess in practical terms, this difference in valuation, it might be probably more obvious for IT. So imagine a kind of puzzle and you have one piece and the other one has all the other pieces. So for you, the lonely piece, the fair value is more or less not that as combined to the whole puzzle. And therefore, this fair value differentials might pop up. But on the other hand, and we haven't discussed that, and I don't see that here. That was my question. Okay, this is the point in time recognition, or this is the over time recognition. I mean, okay, if we scope it out now, it might be probably then a question for later submission.
given that it wasn't in the fact pattern and it's not in the analysis, I think my preference would be not to go there just at the moment. Although it's a fair question, I'm not sure on the fly. Jimmy?
First of all, I agree with the staff analysis and the results, and it's quite clear that after all these pages of wording, and it's very precise to lay out the elimination process. And as John mentioned there, and some others mentioned, maybe there are other ways to get to the conclusion faster or easier, but it tells the differences in eliminations. It eliminated the A's and B's and C's, and I think it is very helpful. And in terms of the comment on the whether the fair value is reliable or not, I think it's complicated for these paper to answer, since we all know fair value could be very difficult to get a precise number. Everybody has his own opinion on the fairness of any value. So I think we could address on this paper somewhere that make sure the fair value is created or calculated based according to the principles or some general guidelines. That's it. Otherwise, we don't want to recalculate or readdress where it comes to their fair values. The assumption or the fact pattern on this paper is to take their fair value as a reasonable or solid assumption. That's it. We don't want to recreate or give them guidelines on their fair values. We could, if other members, other members mentioned, to remind them, make sure the fair value is reliable. That's it.
Bertrand?
Yeah, just to comment on the wording, the analysis is focusing on fair value, which is fair for the question asked. But then you write consequences for impairment testing, and I would have preferred writing this as being impairment testing than impairment requirements. So in the last sentence, if this is the case, the investor also considers the impairment testing requirements in IAS 36 impairment of assets. It seems to me that you're referring to the impairment testing of the equity method investments. So effectively, fair value is an evidence that there exists potentially an impairment necessity. So you apply then the criteria in IFRS 9 or IAS 39. But then when you calculate the impairments, you use the requirements in IAS 36 and its recoverable amounts, the higher of fair value or value in use. So you cannot, there it's hinted, or you might then think, yeah, I just need to consider fair value to assess what is really my recoverable amounts, applying the requirements in IAS 36, which is not the case. So maybe I would have stated, if this is the case, the investor also considers the impairment testing requirements in IAS 36, and if recoverable amount is being the higher of a fair value or value in use, then is lower than the carrying amount of the asset, then it recognizes any resulting impairment loss. I would have nuanced a bit the wording there.
I reply directly, because I don't know. We just have to consider whether we do not have to apply IFRS 5, where we more or less do not base it on the recoverable amount.
But we're not in IFRS 5.
Keep
your IAS 28 investments.
Do you think we should cut it back?
IFRS 5.
So to me, we.
The asset giving away. Yeah, but with my comment is on the assets you keep, i.e. the IAS 28 equity investment. I think in the tentative agenda decision, the reference to impairment is made or intended for the equity method investment. That's what I'm understood from the end of this.
By the way, I've agreed with you, obviously.
I think that we're not trying to write an agenda decision about how to apply the impairment requirements. So why don't we
could start,
cut it down?
Yeah, we could stop at the end of IS 36. We could just say, if this is the case, it also considers the impairment requirements in IS 36.
Or the impairment testing requirements. It's really important because people have difficulty in understanding the fact that applying IS 28, a fair value is just an evidence of impairment. It's not the value you will consider for accounting for any impairments loss, potentially. It's really important to mention that there you assess whether there is an impairment or not. So you effectively, IS 36 is labeled impairment of assets, but then you consider the impairment testing requirements in IS 36.
And I agree.
To specifically mention that way, because some people get confused with that.
So I understand, Bertrand, and I agree completely with you, which is why, by the way, even when we had the extra words, we said recognize any impairment loss, we weren't saying you automatically have impairment.
Yeah, that's
but the only reason, I suppose, that if you go in and apply the requirements in IS 36, you should go through as a first step. So
if it's fine for an English speaking person, I mean, I'm fine too.
I understand, but then
maybe there's a nuance that I'm missing there.
But I do understand that the extra bit in that sentence maybe would lead people to think I have to automatically take an impairment. Yeah. So I think hopefully it's an improvement. If we take that out.
Tony.
Just a thought on the words. Anna, Petrina said you might collapse sort of question C, A and B and explain the outcome. One thought I did have on the words as they are is that at the moment it says apply paragraph 67 to 72 of IAS 16 to measure the gain or loss. B says, in doing so, the entity adjusts the carrying amount of the investment in the associate. Nowhere does it actually say what you might adjust it to. Mm-hmm. So the actual specific conclusion, which is very clear from the paper, that you end up with it at cost being the fair value that was given up, I didn't actually see it specifically in there. So if you're going to collapse it and then explain the logic for getting to it, but then be clear about what the outcome is.
John?
I felt that because of the focus on looking first at the fair values and why there might be a difference if there's something else in the transaction or whether your fair value methods are giving you, whether the measurement methods are actually, or techniques are causing you the difference. I think we could strengthen that as almost something that you would expect to be done as a first part of the process.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd get into talking about reliable, though. I mean, this is a related party transaction, so there's going to be questions about the reliability of measurement of the interest in the associate versus the PP&E given up. And I don't really think that issue, I don't think that should be brought into the agenda decision. I think that's just a factor in trying to determine what's the, is there actually a difference? And if there is, how do I measure my cost of my investment in an associate and my gain? And if there isn't but the first step is to actually determine whether there is even a difference to begin with.
At least I agree with your intention was not to go further probably than say you just have a look at the procedures you've applied, but not to make any commentary about reliability.
Okay. So given all of that, can I get a show of hands from the committee in support of publishing a tentative agenda decision with the tweaks that Katrina has explained? And Sandy?
I couldn't hear the question, what we're saying.
Yes. Whether the committee supports the publication of the tentative agenda decisions with the suggestions that Petrina had made, which include in particular being less specific on the order of steps in question C and bringing out more the point about checking the fair values by considering the fair value of the PP&E and the amount of the investment in the associate separately. and whether there's any reasons for the differences.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're outperforming on